Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. Ngaio Bilim is a very funny man, which is convenient because he's a professional comedian. He's also a journalist, actor, activist, connoisseur, raconteur, a very good friend, and the very best weed comic in the business. We were talking the other day. My old recorder finally bit the dust, so I got a replacement. Been trying to learn how to use it, and it's been an uphill struggle, I'm a little embarrassed to admit. And he was giving me a hand figuring it out, so we recorded this. So what do you think we're going to... We haven't got the attorney general named yet. We've got a few people from the cabinet that have been named. Your attorney general down there in California is the selection to be the Health and Human Services Secretary. He's a career politician, so it, you know, it makes sense. What do you think? What do you think for the next few... what do you think we're going to be seeing for the next few years?
I have no idea. Hopefully we'll see a giant jump to the left. I mean, one of the challenges that we're having right here is... in people's zeal to compromise and get things done, we don't start from far enough left, right? You have to beware the person who says, meet me. You know, I think we talked about this before. Somebody says to you, meet me in the middle, and then you step toward them and they step back, and all of a sudden you're further right than you wanted to be. That's not a compromise. So I think we have to start all of our proposals way further left, and we need to win Georgia. And then maybe we can actually get some things done, and we can start spending some money on people and not machines of death and destruction, and not just give people who already have a lot of money more money. I mean, you know, I hate to break it down to Walter Matthau in Hello, Dolly. But like he says, money is like manure. It does no good unless you spread it around.
Down there in California, one of your one of your state senators is reintroducing legislation that would allow a few of the cities to start doing real harm reduction, overdose prevention, safe consumption sites to be set up. Now, you and I have been to an alcohol safe consumption site, which we call bars. We've been to the marijuana safe consumption sites back when they allowed people to have indoor consumption of these. What do you think the harm reduction and what do you think of this development?
I'm a fan of harm reduction in all forms. I generally get the small hamburger when I go to McDonald's. I drink a Diet Cola, which is definitely a form of harm reduction. I think anything, you know, no one's going to eradicate any particular vice, right? Prostitution's been around forever. Drugs have been around forever, right? Since the first person ate some sort of weird mushroom or decided to set a plant on fire and really liked the effects. So that's not going away. You can't stop people from doing it. If you could stop people from doing it, it would have stopped, right? We threw enough people in jail in the 80s and 90s where you think you would have stopped it. And no, it just made drugs more expensive and people more sneaky, right? So anytime you can help people be safe in their vices, and also people who maybe have overindulged can find help and support with getting their addictions under control, that's always better. It's always better. Education is always better than prohibition, right? Harm reduction is always better than prohibition. We're trying to meet people where they are. And you can't punish your way. You can't arrest your way out of a drug crisis. So I think it's great. Like, you know, if you here's a plug. I got an album called Weedier and Sexier. It's on all the streaming platforms. And I have a whole bit about we need to legalize all these drugs. So we can talk about it.
That's what I appreciate. I mean, you obviously you're a weed comic, you're associated with weed, but you're a drug policy reformer, you're a social justice activist, and you are all that. Even the, you may
We're
laugh, you may
people,
you may laugh, sir.
Think I'm a stoner comic, Doug. Shh. You can't be telling people these things; they'll start to think I'm dangerous. I just want them to know, think that I just travel around and smoke weed and tell jokes.
Right? Subversive.
It's my cover. That's how I get away with things.
But let's talk about weed for a minute, because the MORE Act was passed by the House of Representatives, a marijuana opportunity reinvestment equity act was passed by the House a couple of days ago. You don't sound impressed.
I'm not impressed. Look, Mitch McConnell's not going to bring it to the floor. Right? I mean, listen, baby steps are still steps. So this is probably, I think this is the first time the MORE Act has ever actually gotten an actual full floor vote. And I'm glad that it passed. It has some troublesome things in it. Of course, according to federal law, if you have a felony, you can't run a cannabis club, which, you know, you're just cutting a lot of people who are already in the industry out of the industry. So you're turning outlaws into even deeper outlaws, right? Because cats who have gotten into cannabis, they're not known for following rules and regulations. I know it's
I'm shocked.
You're making a shocked face. I know you're shocked. So you can't really make You can't make it so that outlaws have to continue to be outlaws. You got to help people. I feel like out of all of the legalization programs that I've seen, and I haven't been to Michigan or Illinois yet, but I feel like Oregon, for most of its problems, has done it mostly the right way. They made the barrier to entry ridiculously low. And so everybody can get into it. And sure, a lot of people got into it and lost their shirts and they're no longer in it, but they had a chance to get into it, as opposed to like California, where you need like $5 million. You need $2 million just to get involved, right? And so that doesn't make any sense. And also the taxes are crazy high. So why would I go to a club and spend $60 plus tax, which is like 20% after you get state and local taxes involved, when I could just go to the secret sessions, which are still taking place, and buy eighth of weed, which is just the same quality for $40, for $35, right? So the thing about Oregon is, like, they're damn near giving weed away. You could buy a joint for $1. You could buy an eighth of really good weed for $30, for $40. And that's where the prices should be. I mean, you know, I half of me is like, that's not fair to the farmer. Right. Because now the farmer's got to grow almost twice as much cannabis on the same amount of land to receive the same amount of profit that they were getting 10 or 15 years ago when it was illegal. But I also know that there's really no black market for cannabis in Oregon. Right. You don't really have to call your homie and go, hey, man, where can I get some weed? Because it's bountiful and inexpensive. I mean, maybe if you're in Eastern Oregon, where those guys don't really allow dispensaries, unless you're Russ. Russ has one close to Idaho, I understand. But other than that, you know, you have to make it easier for people to buy weed and easier for people to be legal. Cats who were already used to operating outside of the parameters of the regulations are not going to have a problem maintaining that. Right. That's why we don't call it the black market anymore. We call it the traditional market or the legacy market. That's what they call it in Canada. The legacy businesses.
Ooh. I like that. But legacy.
It's a legacy, eh? Yeah. It's a legacy, eh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't just mean that you got accepted to college without having to apply because your dad and all that kind of stuff. Your dad president of the United States or something.
You're not pledging a frat. You're just trying to score some weed.
Wow. Actually, you know, one of the news things that just hit me, that just crossed my screen a few minutes ago. Wondering what you think about this one. Washington, up in Washington State, the Liquor and Cannabis Board is suspending a license of a testing lab, found that they had falsified 1,200 reports at least. The oversight of Liquor and Cannabis Board finding that I've heard from one of the experts up there in Washington before about some of these testing labs being a little bit shady. What do you think about the state oversight and talking about companies being a little bit, you know, it's not just the people who used to operate on the other side of the law. It seems that some of the folks who started out operating on the legal side of the law are playing things a little shady.
One of the things, right? Because I mean, you know, you're running a business, so you got to make a profit. So that means you got to find, it's mandated that people get their cannabis tested when they're in the legal regulated market. Right. But there's a lot of, there's no real standard. there's a lot of leeway. You know what I mean? So people do definitely do like lab shopping because one, you have to educate your consumer base where it's not really about the amount of THC, right? Everybody wants a super high THC cannabis. They think that's the best value, but it's not necessarily true, right? Like Everclear is 90% alcohol, but people don't drink that constantly all the time, right? It's about flavor and effect. So terpenes are really where you're going to get the feeling that you want to have. So they don't really judge terpenes. I would love to be able to go to the store and be like, oh, well, this is 15% THC, but it's also 0.05% pinene and 0.3% linalool or whatnot. And that would give me a better idea of the effects I'm going to have, since they don't let you smell the weed, especially in Washington. Your nose knows. We had that problem in Sacramento a few years ago. There was one lab that was botching tests and messing up tests and losing paperwork and not doing it right. I mean, that, you know, listen, there's going to be people trying to take advantage of things in any industry, in anything you do. That's just how a small percentage of humans are, and they end up it up for everyone else. But people do a lot of lab shopping, right? Because you want a lab that's going to give you the highest results you can get for the lowest amount of money. And people are going to want to take advantage. And people who run labs, there may be a shady person or two. And it doesn't even have to be the boss of the lab. It could just be a technician who all of a sudden is getting great results. And so that's just a hard thing to fix, because you don't want to have to send your to two labs, right? And now, and then one comes back, it's 13%. The other one comes back, it's 18%. You're like, well, which one is true? Who really knows the thing? So it's just one of those challenges. And I think the state is right in that case to suspend some licenses if there were shenanigans that can be proven.
Hopefully people will learn a bit more about the product, about weed. As you were saying, the terpenes and all that. Really, one of the great advantages of it being in Oregon is that when we purchase at dispensaries or shops around here, we can get a whiff of what we're trying to purchase. And that's exactly what tells me what I want.
Has that changed much during the pandemic? Because, you know, I wrote a thing last year for Leafly.com about let us smell the weed, right? I love the deli style where they bring out the big ass jar and you can damn near stick your face in it, or at least get a good whiff of the cannabis and take a look at it. But California has kind of gone Washington style where it's all in a bag. You can't really smell it. You got to take the buttender's word for it. But the buttender, there's 100 different kinds of weed on the table. The buttender hasn't had a chance to try all the weed. And what if the buttender has different weed vibes than you do, right? I mean, when I was a buttender, it was always nice. There were definitely some people who would come in and we kind of smoked the same. So we would chop it up and they would trust me on occasion. But there were other people that I would try to help, but we didn't smoke the same. So I would have to, they would find a different buttender who had their same kind of flavor profiles in mind. And we would work it out that way. So, but you know, now I don't know if I would want to stick my nose in a jar where 50 other people have stuck their nose in the jar. So we need this vaccine so I can have giant weed circles and threesomes again.
That's part of a conversation with the comedian, journalist, and activist Ngaio Bealum. We'll have more in a moment. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Academy for Justice at Arizona State University Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law, in conjunction with the Arizona State Law Journal Online, recently hosted a virtual symposium on COVID-19 and vulnerable populations to examine and challenge the pre-existing health-harming legal and policy obstacles that are exacerbating the danger of the COVID-19 national health crisis to vulnerable populations. Let's hear now a brief portion of one of the presentations. This is Madeline Vasilchuk, Assistant Professor of Professional Practice at the Louisiana State University Law School, where she directs and teaches the LSU Juvenile Defense Clinic.
In the juvenile legal system, on the delinquency side, I think one of the things that shows up is the flaw that this is a civil system at all. We have this sort of formality of being a civil system and non-criminal system, which means that usually the courts say that this has to be rehabilitative, and the differences between what I litigate in trying to represent kids and what Professors Rovner and Godfrey litigate with trying to get adults out of these situations, Eighth Amendment type situations, is based on the idea that it is non-criminal. But then during this pandemic, we have basically ended all rehabilitative programming of any meaningful kind in juvenile detention centers, you know, youth jails and prisons, and then say that they still need to be detained. Well, if there's no longer any rehabilitation going on, and that's the reason that we are keeping them there, then what are we doing? And, you know, it's not as if this is new. Inspector General reports have long told us that youth prisons are counter-therapeutic. They are doing exactly the opposite of rehabilitating children. And so now in this situation in which we know that children are most likely to succeed when they go home if they have strong ties with their families kept during detention, continuation of education, and mental health care. All of those things have been cut off during the pandemic, and yet we won't let kids go home. And that doesn't really comport with the doctrine about what the law says should be happening with these kids. So I think at that point, we have to confront that we are not using the system for what we say we are using it for.
That was Professor Madeline Vasilchuk. She's an assistant professor of professional practice at LSU Law School, where she directs and teaches the LSU Juvenile Defense Clinic. She was speaking at a virtual symposium on COVID-19 and vulnerable populations that was hosted by the Academy for Justice at Arizona State University's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law in conjunction with the Arizona State Law Journal Online. Welcome back. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you're listening to Free Culture Radio. For those of you keeping count, this is show number 52. I know, neither did I, but here we are. One of the people on show number one was my guest on today's show, Ngaio Bilum. Ngaio is a comedian, journalist, activist, and entrepreneur based in Sacramento, California. Let's hear more of our conversation. Now, back to the world of weed. Oh, this is another one of this is another weed story recently covered. Saw a bit in a Seattle newspaper. One of the recent businesses that was touting its connection to the locals. It's going to be one, you know, the local pro basketball franchise was going to be heading up this great weed company. Turns out at the time they made the announcement, according to South Seattle Emerald, he wasn't actually an owner or partner in the business yet, and after it's all said and done, he'll actually only be a 5% owner. They were pointing it out as a problem with some of the minority and women-owned business equity kind of programs that some of these are doing. The idea of, you know, your basic person as prop.
Up front. It's a front. It's, you know, it happened in the construction industry. It happens in a lot of industries when they try to do this. It comes down to the money. You need $5 million. In Washington State, you need a few million dollars, right? So even if you're trying to expand the equity program, you can't get a loan. There's not a lot of rich black people, especially not a lot of rich black people who want to get into the cannabis industry. Jay-Z is trying to take it over. I think Gary Payton wants to get involved. I'm not sure if Marshawn Lynch is doing anything. John Sally down in L.A. is opening the thing. And this is all gravy, but a lot of companies are going to try to find someone to at least front and be the front man. And, you know, I don't know what to say. It is what it is. That's just how, you know, I remember in 2000, was it late 2007, 2008, when that recession hit, and Alan Greenspan, who was in charge of the Fed at the time, had said that he was surprised and he was about 70 years old. He said that he was surprised at the amount of greed in the industry and that he hadn't taken it into account when he was doing his calculations and whatnot. I was like, bro, how old are you? How many people do you know? You're in finance. What do you mean that you're surprised at greed? That's why people get into finance. Greed is the only god that can never be appeased, right? All other gods can at least be appeased or sated or satisfied for a little while. But the very nature of greed means that there's never enough. And this is the challenge with capitalism. How much is enough? How much do you, until you say, well, you know what? I got enough. I'm going to let somebody else do it, or I'm going to give some of it away, or I'm going to do some other things. They don't think like that. Jeff Bezos could give each one of his employees $100,000 and still have as much money as he did before the pandemic. Right. And do you see him arguing to give people money? Do you see giant Christmas bonuses for Amazon employees? No, you do not. And this is the challenge with capitalism. These guys, they really think that there's a finite supply of money. Money is imaginary. It is not finite. It's infinite. We could do whatever we want with it. You guys choose to hoard it and be... Pardon my French. I try to stay calm. Man, I used to be so moderate in my approach to things, and I'm just old and radical now, and I don't know what happened. People say you get more conservative when you get old, and I am way more burn all the down than I ever was. I used to think... to work together with people. Maybe they're just misguided. Maybe they just need a little more education. Maybe if we approach them with the facts and the truth and some science, they'll come around. No, it doesn't work that way. You know, and you don't want to go so far left that you become right, but it is hard not to want to push some cats around a little bit.
What are some of the businesses that are doing things right?
I think Jesse Horton up in Portland is doing everything right. That guy's a monster. He's the beast, and I mean that in a good way. John Sally at Deuce down in L.A., he's doing a lot of the right things. Flamingo Farms in Richmond, California, I think they're doing it very, very well. Even like Kimia out here, K-H-E-M-I-A, they're woman-owned. They're looking to produce more equity and to get way more women into the thing. That's Kimberly Cargyle and Mandy Tingler and a few other people. Those guys, they're awesome. I love them. So, there's definitely people doing it right. You just got to find them. And of course, the challenge, there's always going to be more people who want to do it from pure greed or just for money, and not always people who want to do it for the right reasons, you know, or who know how to say when enough is enough, or who know how to create space for other people. In the same way that nature abhors a vacuum, as they say, right? Capitalism loves a monopoly. They love a monopoly. They think that if someone makes a dollar, that's a dollar you're not getting. There's at least $2 in the world. So someone can get a dollar and you can also get a dollar. There's plenty of work. There's plenty of people. It's not so much a competition as it is an exhibition of skills, right? You want to show your best and do your best. It's always thinking that you got to push somebody out the way so you can get ahead is not the way to do it. But, you know, what do I know? I don't know. I would probably be richer if I were meaner. You call me on a day, Doug. I'm full of it. I'm full of rage and hope.
That is awesome. That's what we need. That's what we need. It's just we've been without hope for too long. And the rage has been too broad and undirected. I mean, you know, or misdirected. That's the whole problem. People have been pointing out that we had the president in there and we could just, everything was wrong and it's all around blame. It's like, actually, that is wrong that a lot of people are doing. And it's not only that schmuck. He's just the lightning rod that we've been like, we were focusing on. It's like, yeah, well, you know, watch these guys too. Watch this guy, the private businesses, there's other corporations. And it's like, actually, all this stuff is happening and we need to be aware of all that too. You know, sometimes the tweet storm ends up giving cover to stories that we're breaking that should have been an outrage for people, and instead we're just paying too much attention to the projection on the screen instead of looking for the person behind the curtain. You know,
the man behind the curtain. I feel you. Same thing. One of the challenges with America when it comes to political activism is we are a gigantic country. France, those guys will go on strike at the drop of a hat, which is one of the things I appreciate about them. but they're small. You only have to motivate a few thousand, a few hundred thousand people, and you're good to go. 10,000 people in America is a blip. 100,000 people in America is a blip. There's 300 million people here, and it's a gigantic space, right? So it's really hard to organize, say, a general strike or a work stoppage or something that would have a gigantic national impact like that. And I think that's one of the challenges we have. We can do a lot of things on the local levels, which is great, but we definitely need more statewide and more nationwide movements. And, you know, start small, do the little things, because it always adds up. And we see that with legalization, started kind of in California, Oregon, Washington, and now, you know, Illinois, Michigan, Vermont, Arizona, New Mexico's on the way, Montana, South Dakota. South Dakota, who would have thought? Would you thought that South Dakota would have been one of the first? No, but here we are. So these are the things. Oklahoma, for crying out loud. Like, I was in Oklahoma last year, sitting on the patio of a restaurant, smoking a joint in Oklahoma City, and nobody said anything in Oklahoma, right? So we are on the right track. We're going the right way. We just need to do more of that. We need to keep pushing. We need Florida. We need Texas. We need Georgia, right? I bet Kentucky could grow some great weed, you know? And I can't wait till we can have interstate weed competitions, right? California versus Michigan. I'm gonna do one next year, man. I swear to God, I'm gonna do one. Oregon versus California, and we're gonna call it the border skirmish, because I feel like Southern Oregon grows the second best weed in the world to California, but it's close. But it's close, and I want to settle it once and for all and see what's up. We can just hop back and forth, right? We'll go from, say, Wairika to Medford. They're like 40 minutes from each other.
You know, you got to have it in weed. You got to have it. You got to have it in weed.
Weed doesn't like weed. Weed is so anti-weed. Weed California, which is, they love to sell you the t-shirts. They love to sell you the bumper stickers. When you try to open a dispensary out there, they look at you funny. That county's always been against weed. They're starting to come around a little bit, but it's no. Wairika, because it's right there and it's closer to Medford. Wairika to Ashland, if you want to be fancy in your pants and spend a lot of money on a hotel. We'll go from Wairika to Ashland, and we'll have a little border competition.
That was my conversation with the comedian, journalist, and activist Ngayo Beelum. Find him on Instagram or Twitter, where he's at Ngayo420. And that's it. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Thank you to everyone out there who's fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. A big thank you to my guest, Ngayo Beelum. Many thanks to our engineer. And of course, thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Theme music for Free Culture Radio was composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. And you can follow me on Twitter, I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!